Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Today we're going to learn how an antioxidant cocktail is the key to preventing Alzheimer's disease. University of Western Australia, published in the peer-reviewed journal Open Biology. Anything that can help us diminish, lessen, or improve Alzheimer's is a very important issue to discuss. We're going to discuss it in depth. And then I'd like for you to go to prn.fm, scroll down, and look at testimonials. There's nothing in the world better than seeing a 95-year-old gentleman who had full-blown Alzheimer's and now is on the road to recovery using only natural approaches. He's there. His wife's there. You'll hear their story. See him. And all this in a two-week period. By the way, they're there with seven other people. And I think all told, there's 20 people who, in a short period of time, couple weeks, improved, radically improved, or even reversed conditions. So you see, we have the proof. It's time that we begin to look more at preventing these diseases. And what is natural that can help prevent a condition can also be used frequently in the treatment of a condition. You can never use chemotherapy to prevent cancer. You'd never use statins to prevent heart disease, though people do, and it's wrong. You'd never want to take an antipsychotic or antidepressive selective serotonin reuptake inhibiting drug to prevent depression and anxiety, but people do, and it hurts them. So we're going to give you that. Also today, I'm going to be doing an extemporaneous commentary addressing those who believe that the people who are currently in power or who are the senior spokespersons guiding those who are going into power should be given a pass for what they have done to people of color, minorities. If you're going to go after historical figures, which is fine, you know, show what they've done, whether it's Thomas Jefferson or Andrew Jackson or George Washington, being honest about both their limitations but also their achievements, keep it in balance. Remember, Washington owned slaves, but also it was Washington that allowed America, through his leadership, to win over the British, where we would still be citizens of Great Britain, and the consequences of that would be severe. So we have to look at people as through the eyes of their strengths and weaknesses. Otherwise, we should look at ourselves and say, am I perfect? And the answer is no. And how many times have we had thoughts that were not right by any measure? Would we want our entire life to be judged upon those thoughts? And the answer is no. So let us be measured in how we look at someone and what they've done. And let's start with the people who are alive today, because they're the ones who have far greater power to hurt more people than our ancestors. People from 200 years ago. And these people have done no good deed that I can find, only destructive. So how is it we can celebrate people who are racist, celebrate people who are misogynist, celebrate people who are sociopathic, and hail them as modern-day heroes, and only look at those who are classically defined by what they've done against humanity? It's making decisions out of balance. And why do we do that? Here's a question for all of you, and I'll take answers a little later on the program. I believe part of what we're seeing today with all the extreme acts of anger and violence is in no small measure due to poor parenting. I believe that we've had the worst parents in American history over the last 40 years. That's my own personal belief. Because a lot of what you see in the excessive lack of manners, morals, ethics, or understanding society, or context, or patience, comes from the bubble environment that they were grown up in, and what they were allowed to do with no boundaries, and any excess, no matter how extreme, was considered acceptable. That was not the way to help a person become an essential part of the solutions. your thoughts on what has happened to parenting over the last 40 years that has then contributed to the mess we're in today. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888 is our talkback number. But first we go to research from the University of Western Australia has found that a diet, that's your plant-based, healthy, clean diet, rich in nutrients and antioxidants, can prevent or even reverse the effects of Alzheimer's disease. This was a big study, and it showed that the more antioxidants and the more of these nutrients you get into your system, the greater the prevention of the debilitating disease than any other treatment currently available. Now, that's a big deal. They're saying that, not me. Quote, the study published in Open Biology found taking a combination of antioxidants at increasing doses, meaning you go up, was more beneficial at preventing the debilitating disease than any other treatment currently available. Now, shouldn't that be in every gerontologist's office, every internal medicine doctor's office, every anti-aging doctor's office, this information? It should be. It's no one's office. And if this was done at the medical school there, and nothing spectacular, vitamin C, vitamin E, high concentrations, were the most effective at reducing the risk of Alzheimer's disease. Now, they didn't give the percentage, but I'm going to suggest between 5,000 vitamin C spread throughout the day and 800 units of mixed natural tocopherols spread throughout the day. They also got away from the meat-based diets. So, simple. Now, you've heard me mention many times that I believe people should start their day with some green apple juice with lemon in it. I do every morning before I go out to do my run. This is from San Diego State University, just today. Quote, highly acidic foods can increase breast cancer recurrence and mortality among smokers. Listen to the words, highly acidic foods. That means processed meats. There's your pizzas, bologna, salami, your cheeses, eggs, sugary foods and soft drinks. Those are all highly acidic. Now, set aside for cancer survivors who have reduced the capacity to process such foods that produce sulfuric and phosphoric and organic acids, it can increase their death risk 300% if they also smoked in the past. That's a new study. When they looked at 3,000 women through the San Diego State University analysis. But when you take your green apple and lemon juice, you're deacidifying. You're helping the body turn off cytokines and other inflammatory agents that lead to the cells being so damaged because of high acidity that they become cancer cells. Something simple. I believe we could reduce our risk by cancer by almost half, 50%, if we did nothing more than these five things. One, start your day with a deacidifying and alkalizing juice. Two, have at least five healthy fresh juices a day. Three, that includes green tea, by the way. Three, increase our amount of vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin E, rich foods, and have a healthy plant-based diet and exercise. Those would make a difference as well. But this is an important study also. Also, broccoli sprouts can protect against oral cancer recurrence, University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute. So potent doses of broccoli sprouts activate a detoxifying gene and may help prevent cancer recurrence in survivors of head and neck cancer, according to this University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute study published in the peer-reviewed journal Cancer Prevention Research. Why? Because broccoli sprouts are a cruciferous vegetable, along with cabbage and cauliflower and watercress, kale. They're high in a naturally occurring molecule I've mentioned many times called sulforaphane, which previously has been shown to protect people against environmental carcinogens. So sulforaphane induces two types of cells to increase their levels of a protein that turns down genes that promote detoxification of carcinogens. So that's why it works. It's a great detoxifier. Also, from the University College London, published in the Journal of Gerontology, declining eyesight is improved by looking at deep red light. So, look at a deep red light, and it can help you improve your vision. That's important. All right? It's just something that we don't do, and we should. And researchers found that the 6,670 mm light made a difference. All right? And curb your symptoms of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease by adopting a Mediterranean diet. This is from Harvard Medical School. And it showed 46% higher chance of healthy aging if you stuck with a high fruit and vegetables and whole grain diet, eating more fish and plant foods. So that does not take into account the supplements or exercise or de-stressing, which could also reduce your chance to zero. But even that will help get rid of liver disease by adopting a Mediterranean diet, the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is a major killer. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break and come back. And when we come back, I'm going to share my thoughts about how we should be looking at something from a more constructive point of view, not so emotional, more reasonable, and allow the evidence to determine our next step. Let us not start biased and then look for what we can cherry pick to justify our bias, but let's look at what would happen if we had a non-biased mind looking at information. How would it change what we do with that information? I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. I'm Gary Nall, trying to make some sense out of all the things that we're so confused by. I've been doing it with coronavirus. Tomorrow I'm going to do a whole hour special of everything they've told you about the coronavirus is a lie. It's a real virus. It has killed people. It is not a pandemic. And worldwide, we have studied carefully with other scientists who I'm going to be quoting. I'm not going to quote myself from my own research. But I'm going to quote really outstanding scientists to show you that it is not a pandemic. It's not an epidemic. In fact, there's no spike in overall deaths anywhere. And also, the school children should be back in school. There's no opportunity for them to get this virus and die from it. I'll show you the statistics and why have they done this. Then I get into the interesting part, how they demonized a drug that's been shown to save lives because they want to sell you their drug. Then we took a look at the fact that we gave $70 million to make a drug, we, the public, paid, and now they want to charge $3,400 for that drug, and the drug's cost is $10. Why aren't the Democrats and Republicans? Because they all get money from the same place. That's why no reform is going to come, no matter who's president. None. But that'll be tomorrow. Again, one of the things I will do in all circumstances is I will look at a deeper level of using a deeper level of scholarship and investigative journalism to show you the truth in all these arguments that are going on now. But right now, some good news. I was just informed just a minute ago that we got in today our new batch of Supremacy Extra, the 450 grams, is the big jar, pineapple flavor. And that's the one that's got the ascorbic acid, and it tastes like pineapple. It's made from pineapple juice, by the way. It's got magnesium ascorbate, potassium ascorbate, calcium ascorbate, ascorbyl palmitate, acerola, the citrus bioflavonoids like hesperidin, amala fruit, just Google AMLA fruit. Phenomenal. And so it's just a terrific vitamin C. And we got it in today. We've been out of it. So you can call. And I'm limiting it to maximum of 3 bottles per person. 3 per person, that's it. And I'm throwing in a free $40 video, Detoxification and Natural Approach, because a lot of you need to detoxify. So one of the best vitamin C's, what I'm using right now, I had 1 bottle, and it's lasted me a long time, but I take it every day. I put my Supremacy Extra pineapple flavor. I just put it right in my mouth, put 3 scoops in there, and it gives me the vitamin C to start my day with. So now we've good news. We got it in. Great news. And great news, in 2 weeks we'll get the new, I've changed the formula for the new green stuff. And I've got some new things coming at you, really good stuff. And even I'm changing four of our formulas. The changes are in. It just takes between 4 and 6 weeks for them to come. So we've got some exciting times coming. And I managed to find some sources. For 6 months, we couldn't find anyone to give us all of our ingredients because the world supply was just exhausted. But I placed a large order, and they honored it. So we've got some good things coming. And my hope is that within the next 2 months, I can start to offer discounts again. So that's good news. So if you want one of the best vitamin C's in the world that our body needs every day, Supremacy Extra, the big jar, the 450 pineapple flavor, call this number. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And get your Supremacy Extra. Mind you, I don't know of anyone else, but I have not raised my retail price a single penny on any product, even though my costs have gone up substantially. So that's why right now we can't offer any discounts, because everything is in short supply. I'm even out of some things, and I can't do anything until the raw materials come in. And because the high quality of my raw materials, these are not the kind of stuff that you can just pull off a shelf someplace. They have to grow. They have to mature. They have to be graded. They have to be shipped and washed and juiced. I mean, it's a whole process. But now, over the next 3 months, everything will be back in inventory at high amounts, so we can then offer discounts again. But I'm going to give you a gift today, a $40 video when you buy your Supremacy Extra of detoxification, a natural approach. So everybody needs to detoxify, cleanse, how to do it. Dr. Sidney Baker, all these experts are in there. It's a great film. Call this number. Get your Supremacy Extra 450. That's the big size pineapple flavor. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065, because you want the right vitamin C. Everyone else just giving you ascorbic acid. I'm giving you potassium ascorbate, calcium ascorbate, ascorbyl palmitate. That's the fat-soluble vitamin C. Stays longer in your body. Acerola, the stevia, the citrus bioflavonoids, the hesperidin, amla fruit extract, magnesium ascorbate, okay? We're now going to Berkeley, California. We're standing by is Dana Ullman. That's U-L-L-M-A-N. We're going to talk about Wikipedia's adversity towards alternative medicine, the case against and for homeopathy. Dana Ullman is a homeopathic practitioner. He is widely recognized as one of the foremost spokespersons and advocates for homeopathic medicine in the United States. He is the founder of the Homeopathic Educational Services in Berkeley. That's the nation's largest publisher of homeopathic educational material. He holds graduate degrees in public health from University of California at Berkeley, and he has served on the advisory board of the alternative medicine at Harvard and Columbia Universities. He has authored over 10 books on homeopathy, including The Homeopathic Revolution and Evidence-Based Homeopathic Family Medicine. It includes over 200 clinical scientific studies supporting the efficacy of homeopathic treatments. Dana's website is homeopathic.com. Nice to have you with us, Dana.
Hello, Gary, and hello, the tribe of Gary Null.
As you know, we have been writing dozens and dozens of articles, over 73 thus far, exposing the systematic biases and prejudices and unethical practices on Wikipedia to discredit any and all forms of alternative medicine. That includes homeopathy, as well as attacking virtually all of the leaders in the alternative and complementary fields. These attacks by Wikipedia editors violate the encyclopedia's own editorial rules, such as adhering to a neutral point of view. Nevertheless, as we and others have documented, Wikipedia's co-founder, Jimmy Wales, and by extension the foundation that funds the encyclopedia, also embrace an ideological animosity towards alternative medicine, which it characterizes as pseudoscience and quackery. Perhaps homeopathy gets attacked more than any of the other alternative healing modalities, and also most viciously. There has been a concerted effort by a network of skeptic organizations such as the Center for Inquiry, Quack Watch, Science-Based Medicine, and the James Randi Foundation, and the Skeptic Society to not only discredit homeopathy, but to have it banned altogether. And people from these groups have completely hijacked Wikipedia and control the content on homeopathic, on alternative pages. The homeopath's page introduces it as a, quote, pseudoscience, in the first sentence and later calls it, quote, sham and quackery. I know that in the past you have made futile efforts to try to correct this misinformation on Wikipedia. So I appreciate you sharing your experience in having to deal with Wikipedia skeptic editors. And what are your conclusions about the encyclopedia as a legitimate resource on issues of medicine and health?
Right. Well, first of all, I'll say that I ultimately love Wikipedia, except on health and medical issues. I mean, Wikipedia is a wonderful website, but on issues where there's economic interests involved, it really sucks. But just don't take my word for it. Take that word of the Washington Post. The Washington Post did an article a number of years ago where it discussed that the two most controversial subjects on Wikipedia in the four leading languages, English, German, French, and Spanish, was Jesus Christ and homeopathic medicine. Now, in the late 90s, when I began to volunteer my time and edit at Wikipedia, I made a big mistake. I thought at that time that Wikipedia would respect the fact that I would edit under my real name. Most people at Wikipedia edit under fake names so that they can disguise and hide whatever biases or economic interests they have. But I sought to be transparent. So I edited under the name Dana Ullman, thinking also innocently and naively that because I was known and respected in the field, that my ideas would give me some sway. Quite the opposite. Wikipedia's editors, who were antagonistic to homeopathy, chose to determine that because I practice homeopathy, I had a conflict of interest. Now, doctors of all sorts edit on Wikipedia, and they are allowed to write about every medical specialty that they are involved in without any degree of censorship, without any degree of conflict of interest arising. But if a homeopath edits, then they have a conflict of interest. Needless to say, this is not the objective source that we hope for in a website like an encyclopedia like Wikipedia. So ultimately, I was banned from editing anything to do with homeopathy. And 10 years later, just a couple years ago, actually, I ended up choosing to edit some remarks about a doctor named Albert Abrams, who was the dean of clinical medicine at the medical school that later became Stanford University. And as it turns out, he had written 12 books, six of which leading skeptics declared were the cutting edge of medicine of his day. And his three strongest advocates was the president of the British Medical Association at the time, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and the author Upton Sinclair, who was a really famous investigative journalist. And so I was making these remarks in his biography. And because I was doing so, they said, Albert Abrams also was involved with homeopathy. Although I never mentioned that in my particular comments, I was then banned entirely from editing any subject on Wikipedia because I was editing on a subject that was tangentially related. And ultimately, the contributions that I made, providing references to the head of the British Medical Association, to Upton Sinclair, and to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, were deleted. So, you know, the bias is transparent, And for anyone that's tried to change any subject on natural medicine based on solid information, you ultimately get harassed. You get surrounded by dozens of people. They try and do whatever they can to irritate you, upset you, so that you might make one mistake in terms of calling a person out, or and then you get banned. You get banned initially temporarily, and then for a year or two or three or four or permanently. And so, sadly, Wikipedia is a problem. And although I love the website for many subjects, but not on health and medicine.
Well, I would challenge you. I believe that you are completely wrong on one issue, and that is,
go ahead.
Try to find clean water to drink in a half-filled toilet. If you suggest, as many have, that, oh, I like Wikipedia because, you know, I get so much good information, how do you know that other topics are not equally imbalanced and equally biased? You have no proof of that, do you?
No, absolutely not. You know,
you're taking it on faith because it's not. Again, no matter what a person looks at Wikipedia for, the assumption is that you're getting information of an encyclopedia quality. Real encyclopedias like Britannica, one of the top eight and one of the oldest, they show you the person. You get to see frequently the whole background of a person, so you know their curricula vitae, you know their level of expertise. If they're writing on a historical subject, you get to see maybe it's a person from Oxford University who spent 30 years in the Department of History, and therefore you have some faith that the information is objective. If there's a problem, you let them know that you found an error, and almost instantly that is corrected. With Wikipedia, I don't care what the topic is, nobody has any real proof that has not also been subjected to some form of bias outside of alternative health. Because we know, for example, you just mentioned, didn't you not, that the two most contentious topics, according to the Washington Post, was Christ and alternative medicine.
Well,
okay, let's say that you were a person of faith and you just wanted to know more information about Christ. Did it tell you that the skeptics support atheism? They denounce all forms of energy. They denounce and have repeatedly said that there's no benefit to energy medicine. And isn't homeopathy at its core energy medicine? Some thoughts on that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, one of the things I did is that after I was initially banned from writing on homeopathy, the editor of the Huffington Post health section was publishing really good articles on alternative medicine. This was in around 2010. So I then sent her an article on homeopathy, and she wrote me back saying, well, I grew up on homeopathy. What an honor to have you begin to write for us. And then from 2010 to 2015, I wrote 40 articles on homeopathy. And she did her best to get them on the front page of the Huffington Post for 5 years. And these articles typically received 1,000 comments. I mean, to get 1,000 comments and not write about Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump is just, you know, literally impossible. But that's what ended up happening. There were people that hated my articles, and then that brought out all the lovers. So, you know, I chose to then work on a different way to educate people. But then there was a guy that co-founded Wikipedia, a guy named Larry Sanger, who decided that Wikipedia sucked. And he wanted to create an alternative to Wikipedia, and he called it Citizendium. I don't know if you know about Citizendium, but he got that going, I don't know, around 2013 or so. And he was going to require all editors to edit under their real name. And he was actually going to seek out experts on subjects and not just have anyone edit, but, you know, experts. So I initially ended up co-authoring an article on homeopathy for which I was very proud of. And there were two other editors who were scientifically oriented, didn't know much, a lot about homeopathy, but they asked good questions as I would write about different things. And we wrote together a fabulous article. Over time, however, another skeptic joined the group, and he began to delete significant portions of the article, and then we had an ongoing fight. And then the article settled on something that I felt was reasonable, but not good, not bad. And ultimately further, more skeptics added there into the mix, and now the article is not good, not bad, but not, you know, someplace a little bit below what it should be. And that's where it is.
Okay, hold your thoughts right there. Just pull back and hear what you're saying, that the absolute truth gets challenged and compromised down to where it's not the absolute lie, but it's not the truth. How is a person who is interested in a topic supposed to know where on a spectrum the truth is and what happens when you're on the low end of the spectrum and you don't know it? It's like saying, well, of course you can be healthy. You don't need vitamins. You don't need organic food. Just moderation in all things. So you say, okay. And the average American, that's the information they get from their average physician. So eating pork and eating genetically engineered food that is sprayed with pesticides, drinking alcohol, smoking, do anything as long as it's moderation. Now show me the one human being on the planet that understands moderation. So you either have something that's good for you, in which case you know why it's good and you know why you're taking it, or you have something that's not good for you, but you choose to believe that somehow it's not your day to get a karmic consequence. So when it comes to Wikipedia, if it can't be honest about everything, then I have to assume that, you know, why should I believe that it can be honest about anything? Because if I found gross bias on the most looked-at part of Wikipedia, the health issue, then think of the person that comes to Wikipedia that has terminal illness, has tried all the chemotherapy, surgery, and radiation, and now they're still terminal, so they see if there's an alternative treatment that might help them. And they're led to believe it's all quackery, so they just go ahead and die. They accept that they're going to die because there's no other treatment. So when you start realizing how many people are seriously ill with heart disease and cancer and diabetes, and yet look at the approach that the people take on Wikipedia, and they are not in any way lessened. They have absolute unbridled control over everything. So I hold Jimmy Wales responsible. I hold their board responsible. I hold the law firms that represent Wikipedia responsible. And I hold the editors. Now, will that mean anything? We'll see shortly when we get into court, because I'm taking them to court, the individual editors. And we'll see whether or not there's enough outcry that the legislators, unfortunately too many compromised, will take away their protective status. So I just see it a little differently. In any case, one of the biggest arguments about homeopathy, Dana, is there's no real good science. Please cite the peer-review science that's on PubMed, the Library of Medicine, of our government, that says if it appears here, it is a qualified study and therefore can be used by any of the scientists without fear that it's quackery. Show us where homeopathy is on the government's own peer review list.
Yeah. Well, in fact, when you introduced me, you mentioned that one of the books I had written was a book called Evidence-Based Homeopathic Family Medicine. And that's an ebook, and it's an ebook because one of the great things about ebooks is I update it on a regular basis. So when people purchase this ebook, they get a 2-year subscription to ongoing updates. And that ebook now has references to over 400 studies from the peer-reviewed medical literature that are listed in Index Medicus and PubMed. The most recent review of research on homeopathy was published in a highly respected medical journal called Systematic Reviews. And this particular journal doesn't publish individual studies. It only publishes broad meta-analyses, reviews, large reviews of research. And not only did this particular review of research determine that of the highest quality scientific evidence on homeopathy, the studies show that there is a real benefit from homeopathy. But further, what this particular article did is they acknowledged that there were five leading meta-analyses that have been conducted in general on homeopathy, and four of the five have shown benefit from homeopathic medicines as distinct from a placebo. So when you read anyone say that there is no evidence that homeopathy works, please know that you're reading from someone who is misinforming you, or is purposely lying. Now, in 2015, the Australian government published a report that got worldwide attention because they claimed to review 1,800 studies on homeopathy and found that there was no evidence that it worked. Well, as it turns out, last year, the Australian government had to backtrack because although this report had come out, they never made knowledge that the government actually had hired another group of researchers to review the field of homeopathy. And this first group of researchers found that there were a number of studies that showed evidence for homeopathy. So the government actually had to backtrack and then say, we didn't mean to say that there was no evidence that homeopathy worked. Well, this is such a black eye that the advocates of homeopathy in Australia have actually gone to the government of Australia's ombudsman and is now seeking charges of unethical conduct by the health agency in Australia that evaluates research. Because here's the trick that these researchers did, is they decided that the only research they would look at was research that had at least 150 subjects in it. Now, 150 subjects may seem like a small number, but in research, due to the extreme cost that's involved, that is a multi-million dollar type of study to do that type of research. In the British Medical Journal, what the limit that they consider to be reasonable is 20 subjects. And so even though there were dozens of studies in The Lancet, the British Medical Journal, Pediatrics, European Journal of Pediatrics, all these other leading conventional journals, that was a clever way of them ignoring the double-blind, randomized, and placebo-controlled studies showing homeopathy work. I'll give you an example even. There were three studies, one of which was published in the journal Pediatrics, on childhood diarrhea. Now, childhood diarrhea in America is not much of a problem, but according to the World Health Organization, in third world countries, it's one of the leading problems because this diarrhea that infants and children get leads to dehydration, and several million infants and children die every year as a result of this chronic diarrhea. And these three studies have consistently shown that homeopathic medicines individually prescribed had a significantly better effect than a placebo. And I can say that the third study of this trio was published in another leading pediatric journal called Pediatrics Infectious Disease Journal. And the statistical significance was so, incredible that it was not just statistically significant, but what would be called substantially significant. And then in the field of respiratory allergies, The Lancet published a major study on homeopathy and hay fever, where some professors at the University of Glasgow in Scotland, which is Europe's largest medical school, published a study using homeopathic doses of different flowers, pollen, and gave it to half the people got a placebo and half the people got the medicine. And there was a highly statistically significant benefit from those people suffering from hay fever. So then this group of researchers at the University of Glasgow did three other trials, one on asthma, where they first tested people with asthma to determine what they were allergic to that was leading to the asthma. Whatever substance they were most allergic to, then we're given in a homeopathic dose, that house dust mite, that particular pollen, that particular mold or whatever. And that was published in the British Medical Journal. And then they did another study, also published in the British Medical Journal, on what's called allergic rhinitis. It's when people have rhinitis all year long, and it usually is to house dust mite, sometimes to mold. And they had yet another statistically significant result. In fact, it was so significant in this review of ultimately four different studies, two of which, like I said, were published in the British Medical Journal and one in The Lancet. The British Medical Journal had an editorial saying that it is now time to realize that something, that homeopathic medicines are different than a placebo. But even though this was published in 2004, ever since then, the British Medical Journal has not published any studies on homeopathy because the pressures against them are too significant. And what has happened, I'm sorry to say, is there is an institution in Europe, in Scandinavia, called the Cochrane Collaboration. And the Cochrane Collaboration was founded by a group of epidemiologists and scientific researchers who wanted scientific evaluation without encumbrances from economics and from big pharma. And for many years, it was achieving that very well. But then it had a problem with funding. But if someone came to the rescue and began giving them millions of dollars, and I know you're going to be able to predict who that is. That's right. It was Bill Gates. And then a couple of years ago, they did a review of research on the HPV vaccine. And they noticed of the 26 studies that were done on HPV, not a single study used a real placebo. But instead of using a real placebo, they would use the same toxic ingredients of aluminum and formaldehyde and fetal tissue and various other substances that are normally in the HPV vaccine. They just took out the virus, and they called that the placebo. Now, for all of us that are concerned about safety issues, if you're really going to test for safety issues, you should test the vaccine against a real placebo. So believe it or not, as a result of this study, again, it got published in the Cochrane Report, the founder, one of the co-founders of the Cochrane Report, began writing critically about how much Big Pharma has taken over the Cochrane. And he was summarily fired. And then, believe it or not, six of the other members of the board of directors, there's 13 board of directors, mind you, a total of, the founder was kicked out, so five ended up resigning in sympathy. So ultimately, six of the 13 members of the board of directors left the Cochrane. And then that gave the Bill Gates group the opportunity to appoint new members that would really ultimately be brown nosers to Big Pharma. So, you know, In this case, there is really solid evidence that Bill Gates definitely had an impact in changing this. And I wrote an article about this, by the way. And it was a part of an article I wrote about the Plandemic video. And this article is at medium.com. I'm very proud of it. I really took an objective review because I'm also critical of some things that Dr. Mickiewicz has said. And what I'm concerned about is scientific censorship. And that's just what's happening in Wikipedia. It's just what's happening at the Cochrane Report. And it's just what's happening to the video Plandemic. And in this case, here a scientist, Judy Mickiewicz, who's co-authored 30 articles with the leading scientists at the NIH, who was the first to discover retroviruses. And so his work is internationally renowned. And if you've got a chance to look at her book called The Plague of Corruption, Robert Kennedy's foreword to that book is worth the price of the book itself. I mean, Robert Kennedy is certainly my strongest hero. He's the smartest and bravest of all the Kennedys, and that is setting a high bar. And so, I encourage people to do a search for my name, Dana Ullman, U-L-L-M-A-N, the website medium.com, and the word plandemic. You'll see that article there. And then you'll see another article that I wrote just a couple weeks earlier called The Other Half of the Infectious Disease Equation. What about the immune system? Right now in our media, we're getting all this fear-mongering about this virus. And yes, I think we do need to be concerned about the virus, but we have to be more concerned about what can we do to strengthen our immune system. And here's where your work, Gary, is so vital. Nutrition, exercise, meditation, stress management, herbal medicine, homeopathic medicine. And so in this article, I highlight specific things that people can do, and I give references to the highest quality, most respected, even mainstream medical and scientific literature. You'll find that in my articles, both of these articles, and all throughout my writings, there's hyperlinks to all the best resources. So please use them. And then I've covered what I need to say.
So take that, Wikipedia. Thank you very much, Dana.
And now we're going to part two of our Professor Jonathan Haidt. He is one of the most remarkable thinkers in America today. And we're talking about how do we become so spoiled, so removed from the reality of what an educational institution should be about, critical thinking skills, instead of a place to feel safe and be a part of the woke generation. Now to him.
But weakly supported. They actually can't even justify the beliefs they hold so passionately because they've never been challenged. And what that means is that if anybody comes close to challenging, it's very threatening. A phrase they use is, you are invalidating my existence. If you challenge a proposition that I hold dear, you are invalidating my existence. So students are afraid to do so, and I hear all over the place, students say it's kind of boring in seminar classes. No one will disagree. And many students become intellectually fragile from the lack of challenge, and that's why when a controversial speaker comes to campus, they don't just not go, they don't argue back, they have to come together to get the speaker banned, or they do a protest to drown him or her out. For faculty, of course, this has many implications: misallocation of effort, loss of rigor in our thinking, fear of dissent, and recently, just the last two or three years, fear of our students. One of the reasons the comment was made that faculty lack courage, that's absolutely true. Now we're actually quite afraid of our students because it's so easy for them. We're really busy, and at the drop of a hat, if we offend anyone in the class, it could be months of hearings. They can go right to the Equal Opportunity Commission. It's a nightmare, and so we're all afraid of our students. This is why I founded, with my colleagues who wrote that paper, Heterodox Academy. I urge you all to go to heterodoxacademy.org. It's the opposite of Orthodox Academy. And if you are a professor, whether you're tenured or untenured, if you are a tenured or tenure track professor, please join. We have 220 professors now from all fields who have come together to say we actually think that there should be some viewpoint diversity. We think that's important. I just want to share with you our most important project, and this is why I came down here from New York, because we need the help of the trustees and alumni. Here's what we did. We just put this out last week. We took the top 150 schools from the U.S. News rankings, and great. You want a school that has a small faculty to student ratio. Well, U.S. News will factor that in. But what if you actually want to be exposed to viewpoint diversity? What if you want your child to not just be in an indoctrination mill? How can you find out where to go? You can't. Until 2 weeks ago, you can go to the Heterodox Academy Guide to Colleges, and we've quantified. Has the school passed a resolution endorsing Chicago? What does FIRE say about them? What does ISI say about them? And what's been happening in the news that gives us an indication? And here's the rankings. We put it on a 0 to 100 scale. And Chicago tops the list. So Chicago, Purdue, Carnegie Mellon, Princeton is by far the best Ivy. It's the only Ivy that has any claim to promote viewpoint diversity. So these are what appear to be the good schools. Now this is our first pass. We're going to bring in a lot more data. We're coding now whether the school has a BRT, a bias response team, an Orwellian way that you can, if you hear a joke someplace, there's a website you go to, you report them, and then they get visited by an administrator. So that's coming. That's at a lot of schools. So if they have that, we're going to really penalize them. What about the bottom? So you can sort by any column if you sort by ranking. Now, the worst schools in the country on our first pass are Missouri and Oregon, followed by Brown. And those are all in a tie. Brown, Georgetown, Harvard, NYU, a bunch of others are down there, 6 points out of 100. So we hope, our goal is to make this a major leverage point for alumni and trustees, because what I'm finding is that the big donors have not stopped giving. They call up the president, they say, hey, what's going on? I really care about freedom of speech. And the president reassures them, don't worry, we've got it under control. We're doing this and that. Oh, okay. That's right. Yeah, that's right. They are under control. That's right. So I'm really hoping, I'm going to be working with ACTA to try to give donors a clear stop and go signal. Make your gifts conditional on them making progress on this metric. So to conclude, there are two very different views of what a university should be. Based on these two ideas, I think the only viable form for a university that will be a benefit to the public, that will actually bring us forward in finding truth, is one based on John Stuart Mill's principles. And then I'll just put this up here. This is at Heterodox Academy, we have a business plan. This is our stakeholder analysis. This is what we see happening. I'm in a business school now, so I'm learning how to do stakeholder analyses. I thought, let me try it here. It works pretty well. So if you think about the president and the administration in the center, there are a lot of stakeholders. There are a lot of people who care about what the university does. And what you see here is in green are the people who generally care about free speech and free inquiry. So the people in the community, most Americans, as one person said before, most Americans don't like what's going on the universities. The alumni, prospective students generally. So most people out there outside the university are our allies. The yellow region are the people on campus, and that's where the problem is. On campus, you have staff, and you have many staff that are devoted to diversity and inclusion, worthy goals, but if you say all that matters is diversity and inclusion, therefore we don't want any ideas that could upset people. So in red are the people who I think are opposed to freedom of inquiry and freedom of expression on campus. And so you see that in the faculty, the humanities are generally on the other side. As we saw at Yale, 400 humanities faculty rushed to support the protesters and condemn the Christakises. The science faculty are overwhelmingly on our side on this. It took a month, but 40 professors a month later put their names up saying that they supported the Christakises, 40, and they were almost all in the natural sciences, or they were in the Christakises' home departments. And guess what? The Yale students come back saying, those scientists, they need retraining. They need reeducation. They're insensitive. So again, faculty are afraid to stand up. The red line is what we call the axis of something or other. Oh, we had a catchy name for it. But the point is that the federal government, the Department of Education, Department of Justice, are really putting the screws on universities to crack down on any case where someone feels marginalized, and that leads them to these excessive procedures. The axis of outrage, I'm sorry, that's it. So there's an axis of outrage in which ideas propagated in the studies departments of the humanities spread to the social justice warrior students, supported by the diversity and therapy staff, with pressure from the DOE and DOJ. So that's the situation, and that's why we think the solution, well, there's many, you have to do many things, but basically we have to empower or strengthen the people in green and break up the axis of outrage. And if alumni are the most powerful force here, if the alumni will give to schools that are doing a good job of it and tell the president directly, I am no longer giving. Until you work on this problem, I will not give any more money. When that happens, I think we'll start to see change. Thank you.
Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.